Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
The state of Florida now attacking public sector unions. What the past 73 days means to a working woman in America. Let me tell you this, it's not good. Today on the show, we check in with the American Federation of Government Employees and the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association. Welcome to the Wednesday, March 15th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Mr. Arnold Scott will be our first guest on the show today, longtime supporter and contributor to America's Workforce. He serves as District 6 National Vice President of the American Federation of Government Employees. National website, afge.org. And we've got a lot of ground to cover. Number one, the union is calling on the VA to do better after an arbitrator found the agency guilty of violating federal labor law. Now, here's the deal. This goes back about a year, March of 2022, where AFGE and the VA reached a historic settlement agreement that restored employee representational rights, rolled back many of the anti-worker actions that were taken by the previous administration, resolved pending litigation, and they also set some ground rules for future negotiations. Well, they spent 6 weeks at the negotiating table, and then they filed a national grievance against the VA over violations of that agreement. So they came forth with an agreement, the VA did, and then they violated their own agreement, and they violated federal labor law. What happened there? We're also going to talk about employee pay raises and the union. We talked about this last month. They're looking for an 8.7% pay raise for 2024. And right now, according to the White House budget, they are at 5.2%. Now, the union says, well, that's a step forward, but it's still not enough. And keep in mind, those in the public sector, when they're doing comparable jobs in the private sector, are getting paid much less. In some cases, 24% less. So they got some work there. And a lot of this is posted on their website, AFGE, the highlights from the White House's 2024 budget proposal. And it's pretty good stuff. The EPA, the National Science Foundation, got nearly a 20% increase in funding. Social Security Administration, 10% increase. This is a big one here. More food inspectors. We need that. The Biden budget provides an increase of $102 million for the Food Safety and Inspection Service. The funding would allow the agency to hire more inspectors and public health veterinarians to ensure safe and healthy food products. Boy, is that important. Also, more staffing at the VA to implement a new law, which includes boosting medical care, disability benefits, let's see, information technology support, a lot of stuff there that we'll cover. And also, we're going to talk about the PRO Act. National President of AFGE, Dr. Everett Kelly, issued the following statement after the PRO Act. It's actually the Richard Trumka Protect the Right to Organize Act was reintroduced in the Congress last week. And he said, for decades, American workers have been fired, misclassified, strong-armed at captive audience meetings, and otherwise coerced by major corporations when they try to exercise their right to join or form a union. He goes on to say, if workers succeed in organizing a union, corporations use legal stall tactics to drag out the process of negotiating a contract, and that happens for years, preventing American workers from exercising their right under the law to join a union and collectively bargain for a better life. The result? Declining union membership. that has led to an unsustainable increase in inequality. That is so true. So true. AFGE.org. Later in the show, I'm going to check in with Nick Kula. Now, Nick is president of a union which we have yet to feature on this show, the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association. This would be Local 14. Website is AMFA14.org. Nick has been with the union for 8 years, and most of that time spent in Alaska. And what we're going to primarily talk about today is the aircraft technician shortage, which can get pretty scary here. Right now, AMTs, aircraft maintenance techs, are in very high demand for good reason. Air travel picking up. Qualified and licensed techs are spread thin, he says, across all major airlines that hired them. And all major carriers are hiring at unprecedented rates. The current workforce tends to trend toward nearing the ends of their careers. The average age is around 53. And get this, it's estimated that 620,000 technicians will be required over the next 20 years. This is a good paying job, and it requires only 2 years of training or aircraft-related military experience and then passing two exams. So what they're doing right now is a lot of outreach to get the word out about becoming an AMT, an aircraft maintenance tech. And there's some good money here. Some of these techs are making well into six figures. They're also trying to make it easier for veterans to transition into civilian aviation. They've got a program called a Viper that offers vets training assistance, tooling, and aid at the beginning of their civilian aviation career. So this is going to be a fun interview with Nick Kula. We'll learn a lot about the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association. And right now, they're doing pretty well at the bargaining table. I'm reading in Alaska, they just had a wage review that offered their techs an 11.5% raise. And right now they're making, like I said, some of them are making six figures. AMFA14.org is the website. Nick Kula will be joining us later in the show. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at BoydWatterson.com. Republicans in Florida's House of Representatives have filed a proposal which would revise provisions pertaining to public sector union employees. This is House Bill 1445, and it would prevent the deduction of union dues directly from employees' paychecks. Now, Florida Senate will take up its version of the bill, SB 256, and that's happening this week. 256 requires a union to maintain representation of 60% of eligible workers in order to be recognized. Oh, boy. Along with Florida's right-to-work status, these bills threaten unions' abilities to attract and obviously retain members. Both bills, get this, exempt law enforcement and firefighter unions from the changes. Now, mind you, the legislature, again, this is the state of Florida, has considered similar bills in the past without success. However, the dynamics have changed, and the Republicans now have a supermajority in the state legislature. Yeah, this is not good. This reminds me of what Scott Walker did in Wisconsin going back to 2011. He was elected in 2010. And he attacked public sector unions, but he exempted the police because he wanted the police on his side. And you may recall, there were a lot of protests going back in 2011 because of what Scott Walker did. And eventually that led to right to work. Wisconsin, no longer a progressive state because of the people in power. Duke University has announced it would challenge the legal status of their grad student unions by disputing that PhD students are employees. Chris Simmons, current vice president of public affairs and government relations, wrote that PhD students had a, quote, fundamentally different relationship to the university from that of employer to employee. Okay. In doing so, Duke signaled its intent to challenge the NLRB's decision in Columbia University, which was a case going back to 2016 in which the board found that grad students were employees. The Duke Grad Student Union criticized Duke on Twitter, calling this a transparent delay tactic and pretty much union busting. Yesterday was a significant day. It was Equal Pay Day. And I'll tell you, there's one organization that's done a whole lot of very good work on Equal Pay Day. And for years, I've been talking about the pay disparity between men and women. And yesterday, the Institute for Women's Policy Research came out with their report, and they do this every year, women earning less than men, whether they work in the same or in different occupations. It's a gender wage gap survey, and they covered race, ethnicity, and occupation. Now get this, listen to these numbers. Last year, 2022, women earn less than men for full-time weekly work in almost all occupations, including 19 of the largest occupations for women, and in all of the largest 20 occupations for men. The only occupation with no gender difference in medium weekly earnings for women and men, teaching assistants, where the medium weekly earnings are $662. That's the only one. After adjusting for inflation, women's and men's real medium weekly earnings last year were lower than the year before, 2021, by 2.7% for women, 2.6% for men. Here's a rundown. Women's medium weekly earnings last year were $958. For a guy, $1,154. That's a gender earnings ratio of 83% compared to 83.1% in 2021. So that means it took until yesterday for a woman to equal a man's salary, and that's 73 days. 73 days. So you got to work 365 plus 73 to equal what a guy made in 365 days. And if you go to the website, just Google this website. It's Institute for Women's Policy Research. I have it in front of me. It's about, my gosh, 10, 12 pages long. And they've got every profession, white, black, Hispanic, Asian populations. They got it all broken down. Cashiers, nursing assistants, financial managers, you name it. And, you know, some gaps are a little bit closer, some are farther. And if you're a Latino, my God, that's the farthest. I mean, they're basically about 59-60% that of a man. Institute for Women's Policy Research, do check that out. All right, quick break. When we come back, we're going to check in with Arnold Scott on behalf of the American Federation of Government Employees.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's liuna.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at uaw.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at afge.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
To Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to Indianapolis, Indiana right now. Joining us on line number one is Mr. Arnold Scott, who comes to us as District 6 National Vice President for the American Federation of Government Employees, proud sponsor of America's Workforce. District 6 covers three states in the Midwest. That would be Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky. We're talking about 15,000 members strong. Mr. Arnold Scott, welcome back to America's Workforce. How are we doing today, my union brother?
I'm doing great, Flash. Doing great.
Thanks for joining us. Always appreciate the American Federation of Government Employees sponsorship, which has been going on for a number of years, led by Everett Kelly. And we'll talk about the PRO Act here later in the show, which was introduced last week. Reintroduce, I should say. But first thing you want to talk about today is the Veterans Administration. And apparently what we're doing, we're trying to unwind the bad things that happened in the previous administration. And I was reading earlier, and maybe you can give us some details on this, Arnold. It sounds like the VA came to the table about a year ago, and they said, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And you kind of said, well, that's good. We're going to move in that direction. And then all of a sudden, they changed their mind and violated their own agreement. What's going on here, Arnold?
That's true, Flash. What has happened is for over a year, the VA, the National VA Council, has been in negotiations with management trying to negotiate a new master agreement. And management has come to the table and bad faith bargained. So the VA council got tired of it, and they filed a unfair labor practice against them. Well, they filed a grievance against management for bad faith bargaining. And basically what the arbitrator, because it was arbitrator Felice Busto, she found a couple of things, you know. Basically, when they filed the dispute, the VA alleged a couple of things. They alleged that it was about that they were violating the ground rules and that they repudiation of their global settlement agreement, the agreement that you was talking about, where they sat down and talked about they were going to do these things and then violated their own settlement agreement. That was one thing. And number two, they were insisting, they insisted to go to impasse on permissive subjects, you know, subjects that were permissive within the union statute, They insisted on going to impasse over, and they were ignoring the FLRA presidents, and they also alleged that they were surface bargaining. Well, this arbitrator, Busto, she found, when she heard the grievance, she sustained all four of the National VA's arguments, and she said that, number one, she said that Article 46 proposal that management was proposing to, they were eliminating local bargaining rights throughout the master agreement, and that they were making changes, and they wanted to roll over, and that the article was a violation of the global settlement, which they signed July the 20th, 2021. And she also found that the department's proposal to terminate all local bargaining supplemental agreements without bargaining over the terms, that it was an unfair labor practice, and that it was a waiver of the union's rights. She found that the department's proposal to reduce the union's bargaining rights to collaboration rights, that's crazy, that it was a violation of the agreement, and that it was an unfair labor practice. She also found that the department's refusal to recognize the Ross Agreement, which is one of the agreements that they was raising up in negotiations by the FLRA, that it was a violation. It was an unfair labor practice. And she found that the gutting of existing rights to existing rights to employees, lack of, she found that there was a lack of movement in its proposals and a regression of the proposal, and that it amounted to surface bargaining. So exactly what the union was proposing, what the union was saying, she found in favor of the union. You know, I personally find this troublesome because, you know, I'm thinking about the, you know, what the president had directed, you know, that, you know, negotiations was in the best interest and organizing was in the best interest when he came into office.
Sure.
I think that what the VA is doing, it violates all of that.
Arnold, it seems to me like they don't even know who's in the White House right now.
That's exactly it. You know, yeah. I mean, and they said that the arbitrator argued in this, that they had to do a posting to all the employees, and it had to be signed by Secretary McDonald saying that they would cease and desist from these type tactics at the bargaining table. To me, I mean, when I think about this, it's almost like the Trump administration team when they were in.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me ask you, let's stop right there. The people, you know, McDonough was appointed by Biden, all right?
Right.
So, but the people under him, are we talking about holdovers from the previous administration that obviously are not union friendly here?
A lot of that has been going on within the federal government, where you got holdovers and they're just setting. I mean, it's like the Trump administration is still in. We need to get rid of those people and get some new people in, somebody who will follow the directions that the president is given.
Right, right, right. Okay, so how do we do that? I mean, is your union, AFGE, trying to say to the people in power in Washington that, you know what, we got some roadblocks here. We got to move forward.
We've been circulating a petition to get rid of the chief negotiator for the VA team for seem like about 8 months now, trying to do exactly that. Because the chief negotiator is one of the holdovers from the Trump administration. And we feel like until that happens, they're just going to continue to do the same thing that they're doing.
Okay. Are you saying we're at a stalemate right now because of the people in power?
Yeah, I think we are at a stalemate, and you know, to me, the secretary needs to exercise his authority and get rid of that chief negotiator and get somebody who wants to implement the spirit of the administration.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Biden was pretty clear. He's been encouraging collective bargaining within the federal government. He made that statement a number of times. And the people there that have good jobs are not following the order from the White House. That's exactly what's going on here. What about the VA secretary here? Do you have a campaign? You know, I mean, doesn't he have some power here to make some changes?
Well, I think he does have some power here, and I'm sure that our national president, Everett Kelly, is having some communications with him. And I think that with this agreement right here, it gives some clout to what the VA council has been saying. And hopefully the secretary will look at that and will make some changes.
Yeah. Yeah, some changes have to happen, and they have to happen right away. Yeah, this is all posted. There's a good story on this on the national website, afge.org, and it kind of summarizes what Arnold and I have been talking about here. This is crazy. This is crazy. They come up with an agreement. I mean, we're going back a year. Then in July, they sign off on it and said, okay, we're going to unwind the bad things that happened during the Trump administration. And all of a sudden, they get to the bargaining table, and they say no. They say no. They violate their own order. Amazing. Just amazing. Arnold Scott joining us on our live line today on behalf of the American Federation of Government Employees. We're talking District Council 6 serves as national vice president. District Council 6 is Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky, 15,000 members strong. Nick Kula will be joining us later in the show. Nick is president of the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association. That would be Local 14. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hello from the Communication Workers of America, District 4. We are a labor union representing a vast array of workers in different industries, including the Association of Flight Attendants, Telecommunications, CWA Passenger Services, Public Health Care, and Education Workers, the IUE, CWA Industrial Division, the National Association of Broadcast Employees, the CWA News Guild, not to mention our growing digital sector, and many others. If you're interested in organizing your work group or learning more about what it means to be CWA strong, visit our website at www.cwad4.org. That's cwad4.org.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between,
Our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. Let's go back to Indianapolis right now, rejoin Arnold Scott. Arnold is District 6 National Vice President on behalf of the American Federation of Government Employees. National website, AFGE.org. All right, Arnold, let's talk pay raises. And we've been on this issue for the last couple of months. I know your union is seeking a 8.7% raise for 2024. And the Biden administration, well, we got a little work to do. I guess they're at, what, 5.2%? Is that right?
That's what the president proposed in his budget, a 5.2% pay raise for federal workers.
So what's the game plan here to get it up to 8.7%?
Well, I can tell you that we're asking that they pass the Fair Act. And if Congress passes the Fair Act, then included in that is the 8.7% pay raise. And we've got congressmen and senators who have signed on to the 8.7 and who's pushing the issue for us. Last year, federal employees got the largest pay raise that they've gotten in a while, which is a 4.6. And we was pushing the 5.2 then. And they got the 4.6, which was the largest increase. Government workers are the bedrock of our democracy. They care for our veterans. They protect our borders. They keep our food supply saved and our water clean. And despite this critical work, the federal salaries are 23% behind the private sector. And, it makes it hard to retain and to hire good employees. So while we, endorse this 5.2%, we're looking for the 8.7%. Because the 5.2% is the highest pay raise that the federal workers have had since the 1980s. So, but we're fighting for the 8.7.
So right now we're at 5.2%. We got to get to 8.7%. And just a recap here, when you compare what government workers do to the private sector, we're looking at being underpaid by about 23%. So you know what that leads me to say here, Arnold? Maybe you should ask for 23%. Then you'd get it up there.
Well, I'm not in disagreement with you on that. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to slowly close the gap is what we're doing.
Right, right. I get it.
Rather than asking for a 23% pay raise up front, we're just trying to close the gap each year to get to that, eventually get to that 23%.
No, I get it. Yeah, that would scare off a lot of people. But anyway, sometimes you got to go bold. But I get it. Yeah, there's some good stuff here posted on AFGE.org, the eight highlights from the White House's 2024 budget proposal. You know what really caught my attention? And thankfully, too, the TSOs, the Transportation Security Officers, got a pay raise in that budget of 30%. Yes. I think that takes effect in July, if I'm not not misinformed on that. But you know what? What really caught my attention was the food inspectors. They're going to get, I guess, an increase of $102 million for the Food Safety and Inspection Service for a total of $1.3 billion. And boy, you think about, especially processing today, it's so important. I mean, you are what you eat, and you know, you don't want to get sick. You don't want to get sick, and it's so important that we have the right people checking those processing plants. It's so important, so important.
That's true.
Let's move on to the PRO Act here, the Richard Trumka Protect the Right to Organize Act. And I see a statement, and I read the statement from your national president, Dr. Everett Kelly, on the importance of this. But I'd like to hear your point of view on the Protect the Right to Organize Act. Arnold, what's your view on this?
Well, I can tell you that this has probably been one of my most adamant things that the labor movement needs to do. I mean, is to organize. And to me, the PRO Act is a step in the right direction. I mean, it will stop all these corporations from busting the union and using these union busting tactics when all the workers are trying to do is organize and bargain collectively. If workers could succeed in organizing a union, usually what happens is the employer drags out the contract negotiations, preventing the workers from exercising their rights under the law.
Now, Arnold, let's be honest here. You know, the House of Representatives has gone to the other side on this issue as far as the likelihood of moving forward on this. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, basically what we're going to do is we're going to force Congress to face a choice. You know, the legislators can stand with American workers whose legal rights are being trampled on by the private employer, or they can stand with the wealthy and the elite people and continue to exploit the workers and the working class. But we're gonna force Congress to make a choice.
So, Arnold, it sounds to me you basically kind of know where this is going to go. You just want to put the representatives who are anti-labor on the record saying that they're not going to vote for this. Is that what I'm hearing in this conversation?
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. And then come election time, we're going to hold those people accountable for the vote that they take.
There you go. All right. Arnold Scott, District 6 National Vice President on behalf of the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE.org. Lots of good information posted on that website. Arnold serves as a national vice president, District 6, including Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky. Good conversation as usual, my brother. You take care. Stay safe. We'll be talking, I'm sure, down the road in 2023, okay?
All right. You too, Flash.
All right. Arnold Scott on behalf of the American Federation of Government Employees, national website, AFGE.org. Arnold serves as District 6 national vice president. And that encompasses three states, the state of Ohio, Indiana, as well as Kentucky. We're talking about 15,000 union members there. AFGE.org, the national website. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to check in with Nick Kula. Nick is president of the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association, Local 14, AMFA14.org. We'll talk about his position and the aircraft technician shortage. Pretty scary stuff. We'll talk about it next, right here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. In fact, we'll be checking in with Pat Gallagher on behalf of the Labor Federation tomorrow. Right now, let's go to Seattle, Washington. And joining us on line number two is Mr. Nick Kula. Nick is president of the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association, Local 14 AM. FA14.org, and we'll talk about the aircraft mechanics and the technician shortage, which is pretty scary. But the interesting thing about Nick is his career change. Nick Kula, welcome to America's Workforce. And you were telling me off the air, I guess you were a bartender and a server, got married, had a family, and you realize, you know what, I don't think I'm going to make it on this income. I'm going to let you pick it up from there, how you got involved with this union. Go ahead.
That's absolutely the truth. Yeah, I came from a service professional background, was doing that for nigh on 10 years straight out of high school and college, and then had a hard left turn and went to AMP school and got my FAA certificate. But definitely a hard left from going from the service industry to being an aircraft technician. I kind of just decided what did I like when I was a kid, and it was always airplanes and flying things. So getting to work on them was quite the 360.
That's awesome. And I was reading earlier, I guess it's not too lengthy, a couple of years to get the training and experience to become an aircraft technician. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly correct. It's a two-year program. You go to, in Seattle here, there's a couple of community colleges that offer it, but there's also specialty schools across the country. But it's generally a two-year program, unless you have military experience, and you can circumvent that. And you graduate with an associate's degree if you choose to pursue some other coursework or just the FAA certificate, airframe and power plant license.
Now, if you have military experience, you said some of that you could circumvent. How much of that? I mean, like maybe half of that, cut that time in half or what?
At least, yes, sir. There's a program that I know at South Seattle College that they sponsor where it's actually only a 10-week course if you have the military credentials, and they just accelerate you through the AMP license. What they tend to say is it's a license to learn, because you have to learn everything from general aviation all the way to commercial airline industry things. So you learn like dope and fabric on, you know, old time biplanes, in addition to learning how to buck rivets on, you know, aluminum fuselages. So there's a distinct bandwidth of things you have to know. So for the military people, obviously they're not going to know the dope and fabric side or how to spin a prop or time a magneto, but they accelerate you through all that so you can still get your license just the same.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. From biplanes to jets, that's quite amazing. So with regard to the military, I understand you're doing some outreach to make it easier for vets to get involved in this profession. Can you give us some details on that?
Yeah, sure. AMFA, our a national chapter does a partnership collaboration with this program called a Viper, V-I-P-E-R, and they offer vets some training experience. They even do like scholarships. In addition, they provide some tooling for veterans or at least aid towards buying tooling at the beginning of their civilian kind of transition. So it's an awesome program. And, you know, it's not necessarily expensive to get into the A&P world, but most airlines do. For instance, I said tooling. Most airlines require you to bring your own tools. And I mean, if you're in the industry, you want the best. So Snap-on, Matco, Mac kind of tools are, you know, I'll say myself, I spent, you know, almost $7,000 on my set of tools. So and that's on the low end, to be frank.
Yeah. But the payoff is pretty good. I was reading in some cases well over six figures, and I guess also talk about I guess you were working with, what is it, Alaska Airlines, and you're getting raise
there?
Yeah,
I work directly with Alaska Airlines, but our union oversees, as far as AMFA goes, we represent Alaska, Horizon, Southwest, Spirit, Sun Country, and now two Canadian carriers, L3 Harris Moss and WestJet.
And what kind of money are we talking about?
Well, at Alaska Airlines, we top out at just about $54 an hour. But we're going into our contract negotiation this year, so that's subject to change. But, yeah, I mean, I don't work a lick of overtime, and I make $120,000 a year. We have a guy at work who I work with who never goes home, works all the overtime, and he made $325,000 a year. So there's a huge, huge spread.
300 grand for an aircraft
for
mechanic.
Degree. Isn't that crazy? I mean, you can really make money in this field for you know, I mean, I also went to college and I didn't make that money coming out of college, you know. So I'm definitely a convert of the trade school industry.
So I understand there's a shortage here. Why? I don't know, with money like that. What's the scenario here?
I think people have a misperception that the money isn't there, but there. I mean, to harp on your point about the shortage, there's a massive shortage that's coming. And I mean, the average age of the current workforce that we have is about 53. And as many as, I was having some ganders of statistics lately, and they say that 35% of the AMP workforce is between 55 and 64 years old. So we're definitely experiencing, you know, quote unquote, gray out. Where the elder statespeople in our field are our field leans that way, if you know what I mean. So attracting the younger generation is a must at this point. They say the next year alone, there's going to be a demand for 18,000 technicians, and there's only going to be 12,000 applicants. I'm just looking at statistics from a few different agencies here, but that's pretty striking figures in my opinion.
Well, I saw this figure, and I talked about this at the top of the show, 620,000 techs will be required over the next 20 years. Now, where's that figure coming from?
Well, it's coming from the projected growth of the field if the current demand for air travel stays the way it is. And, I mean, there's no path downward at this point. I mean, COVID being the exception, but the actual statistic came from an agency called Oliver Wyman. They're the ones that do some articles about aviation and the industry itself. Oliver Wyman,
You brought up COVID here. Now, did that put a damper on things? Obviously, the industry was shut down, and the mechanics had no work, and probably people are figuring, well, their work is still not available. Is that part of the problem?
Well, you know what's crazy about this industry is that even though the planes weren't flying, all of the maintenance was still required on these planes. So we've never really lost any work. But despite the companies all taking huge government bailouts, I mean, I'll speak very personally on this because it definitely affected me. I even received a layoff notice. Companies were trying to lay mechanics off during COVID as cost-saving measures. And they, because we were unionized, they weren't able to lay off anybody. So, I mean, it's quite rewarding for me to be involved in the union because my job was genuinely saved by having the protections of our union contract. So I'm a huge advocate for unionization in this field.
We're speaking with Nick Kula. Nick is president of the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association, AMFA Local 14. Is their chapter there, AMFA14.org is a website. How many members in Local 14 right now, Nick?
We've got just a shade under 1,000 in our local currently. But we did just ANFA that is just acquired the airline WestJet in Canada, and there are another 600 or so that are going to be joining our local. So it's going to be much more soon. We're constantly doing outreach, and you know, the nice thing about ANFA, I will say, is that everything is democratic and organic. So I mean, even the leadership is all AMPs or craft related. So, and all elected, and even have the right to be recalled by members if they so choose. So everything in our agency is democratic, but that goes to the card drives that drive agencies towards our union as well. They're all grassroots, literally people signing cards to switch over to our union from other unions, and like the Canadian carriers we now represent, they were non-unionized before. Some of them were non-unionized before.
Well, good to hear. Definitely good to hear. So let's talk about addressing that shortage here. Again, we're talking over 600,000 techs will probably be required in the next 20 years. And you mentioned that there's 18,000 positions open. Is that right now and only 12,000 applicants? Is that right?
Yeah, that's projected for 2023. Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, what are we doing? Young people, those that are listening right now, you have to grasp what kind of money we're talking about here. Well over six figures with no overtime. You're saying you're making like 120, and there's some, if you throw in the overtime, if you want to work like a maniac, you can make over $300,000 a year. Now, I'm just wondering, you got to be getting into some of these schools here and spreading the message of what people can make as an airline mechanic. So can we address that here, Nick?
Yeah, absolutely. We've definitely been doing some outreach at ANFA, and particularly in Local 14. ANFA National also does huge amounts of outreach, so huge props to them as well. But me personally, I'm currently involved in the South Seattle College Technical Advisory Committee. I speak only of South Seattle because they're my alma mater for my AMP license, but I have high regard for them. But we help kind of develop the core curriculum so that it can better adhere to what is going to be required in the field once students come out of the program. So as opposed to being so focused on general aviation, to your point, the aviation industry as a whole needs, and the transit industry part of the aviation industry needs technicians in a dire way.
Well, I tell you, I learned a lot just by talking to you. And I tell you, I salute what you're doing. In fact, we just got back from vacation. In fact, we flew Southwest, one of the airlines that you represent. And yes, I, for the life of me, I still don't know how those things stay in the air. I really don't. But it's because of people like yourself that are making sure they're properly maintained and all that. And I would imagine, too, during your career, you've seen some pretty scary things over the years. Anything that you can tell our listeners here real quick?
Well, I mean, you know, to be frank, Alaska Airlines had an incident not long ago where the cowls deployed, or departed the aircraft, I should say. They opened up off the engine and basically turned to shrapnel with the high winds from the landing once they found that the cowls were left unbuckled. So there are, you know, plethora of safety concerns that are, you know, involved in air travel, as you mentioned. And I mean, the one thing that the flying public rarely sees and shouldn't see is our actions. You know, we don't get any credit and for how well everything goes on a day-to-day basis, but the safety of all the passengers on the flights and, you know, the lack of air travel incidents, the huge weight of that rests in our skilled hands. So there's a definite gravity to every wrench turn that you do on these airplanes.
Well, we can't thank you enough for what you do. Nick Kula, president of the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association, Local 14, AMFA14.org. Interesting conversation. Hopefully you'll get some applicants here once this goes nationally on our podcast. We've got six different platforms. So let's keep in touch on this issue, okay, brother?
Oh, please. Yes, sir. Anytime. Happy to talk with you, and thank you for reaching out.
Anytime. All right. That'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, we're going to talk to the attorney fighting for the right to strike. Interesting conversation coming up. Also, the latest from the North Coast Labor Federation. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.